Please just go ahead and allow your physical body to relax. See if we can allow our breath to slow, become steady. There's no hustle and bustle. There's no worries. Feel instead, breath by breath, that we are enveloped in the love of God, as if a beautiful, warm breeze came swirling through a copse of trees. As if we're resting on green grass, listening to bird song and the buzzing of bees. As if, as Jesus said, the rocks and stones themselves would start to sing in praise of the Creator. Breath by breath, we feel if we have asked for love in our lives. That request is being answered over and over in such abundance, so that the very molecules of the air are droplets of the love of Spirit. Just picture yourself in that forest glade, feeling that sense of peace and of love all around you and within your heart and soul.
I'm used to coming right up here, but I didn't want to astonish everyone with my acrobatics. People who sit out here facing this way miss the best thing, which is we have ushers who act out the songs with... It's interpretive dance. It's amazing. We need to put them up front. We are so blessed to be with our friends at Unity of Everett once again, and we're blessed to have good friends, musicians, joining us today. Thank you so much. The Rabbi Nachman of Breslov had a special dish for the Sabbath loaves. It had belonged to his own master, and it occupied a prominent place in his home. Once a student of Rabbi Nachman, admiring the dish, let it drop to the floor where it broke into 1,000 pieces. The student was so upset he could barely apologize. It was so beautiful, he kept saying. It was so beautiful. Rabbi Nachman replied, It still is beautiful. Only now it's in pieces. It still is beautiful, only now it's in pieces. Maybe these words describe something true about so many things of our own lives, about our local community, and our global presence as a species clinging to and daily breaking into pieces our fragile and precious Mother Earth. Something is broken. The sacredness of all existence seems to be shattered. We have long since left the garden, though I feel like we're in the garden today together. On some level, whether conscious or not, we seek to find that unity, to recreate that beauty, to reconnect with that presence each day of our lives, to put the pieces of beauty back together. And if we are fortunate to have the grace to maintain a focus that is spiritual in nature, we perhaps find we are in the world, but not of the world. We walk through this world perhaps in a prayerful state. We have a chance that at least in some of our waking moments, we are not self-centered, self-obsessed, self-seeking, self-justifying, and self-deceiving, maybe. Now, today is the second of the four Sundays of the Advent season, leading up to the celebration of Christmas, what may seem like the peak of Christian observance. But did you know that the season of Advent we are in initially had little connection to Christmas? It's true. Advent began to be linked to the celebration of Jesus' birth in the Middle Ages. Prior to that, in Roman Christianity of the 6th century, the meaning of Advent was that Christ is returning and we must make ourselves ready for the second coming. That's where their heads were at. Before that, still, in the 4th and 5th centuries, Advent was seen as a time of preparation for Epiphany, when new converts would be brought into the Christian fold through baptism. And what did Christians actually do in this preparation phase? These faithful few spent 40 days in prayer, penance, and fasting. For 40 days and 40 nights as well, by the way, they didn't take nights off and go to movies and soirees. The Christian community was occupied with fasting, penance, and prayer, from which I conclude that these early Christians were just no fun. What a bunch of wet blankets. Fasting, penance, and prayer, oh my. But the Advent season has meaning. Now, the meaning is a darkness that precedes the illumination of Christ's nativity. It is for this reason, for example, that the dark purple I'm wearing is the traditional liturgical color for Advent, changing to brilliant white on Christmas Day. In the New York Times recently, the Reverend Tish Harrison Burden wrote that Christmas is a celebration of Jesus' birth. That light has come into darkness, and as the Gospel of John says, the darkness could not overcome it. But Advent, she writes, bids us first to pause and look with complete honesty at that darkness. Isn't that interesting? She goes on to say, to practice Advent is to lean into an almost cosmic ache, our deep wordless desire for things to be made right, and the incompleteness we find in the meantime. We dwell in a world still racked with conflict, violence, suffering, darkness. Advent holds space for our grief, and it reminds us that all of us, in one way or another, are not only wounded by the difficulties in this world, but are also wielders of those difficulties, contributing our own moments of unkindness or impatience or selfishness. As we deepen our practice of Advent, as we allow some of that darkness to precede the light of Christmas, we may or may not include fasting. Probably not, right? Or penance. But I do want to talk today about prayer. I sense that prayer, as commonly understood in 2019, may differ from the prayers performed as a part of Advent prep, say, in the year 419. I find myself seeking to understand what is going on with prayer as we know it in our current world, and what it could be in ways perhaps beyond our usual understanding. Now, in the news of late, we've encountered a term that would perhaps be familiar to the Latin speakers of the year 419, quid pro quo. Quid pro quo, give and take, tit for tat. You scratch my back and I'll scratch yours, pay to play. All these are phrases that describe a transactional relationship. My concern with prayer these days is that it's commonly seen as something very similar to this kind of transaction between two parties. Prayer is something we do to get God's attention so that our team will win, our illness will go away, we'll get the girl or the boy, the job, the car, the stock options, the votes, the bitcoins. I'll scratch your back, God, and you scratch mine. Jesus is on the main line. Tell him what you want. Now, we may protest that we don't see prayer this way. Oh, no. But they say that there are no atheists in the foxholes. And even if we don't tend to pray in this spirit, when we get that bad diagnosis, when our world is really on fire, when our loved one is in an accident, I feel certain that many of us could find ourselves approaching prayer with just this deeply ingrained attitude. What's in it for me? Because I'm hurting. I don't know what to do, and I need help. So help me, God. So help me, God. It's in our language and our culture. I'm praying for rain. I'm praying for a miracle. I'm praying for you. I'm praying for a miscarriage. I'm not trying to be inappropriate, although why should I change now? These are all suggestions from Google when one enters I'm praying for into the search engine. It's in the origin of the word. To pray at its root means to request, derived from the Latin word precari, to ask earnestly, to beg, to entreat. But I don't think this is what prayer is or what prayer is for. Although we may fall into using it this way when we're in hot water, in dire straits. I don't believe that true prayer in its highest expression is in fact a quid pro quo. I'll say these words or assume this pose so that you will help me. My God is not a merchant of blessings waiting for me to exchange the right words or attitudes, postures, or ritual before granting a boon. My God is not subject to manipulation by my puny ideas or actions, or those of any tradition created by mortal humans. For God's omniscience extends even to my heart. And as Jesus said before teaching what we call the Lord's Prayer, God knows what we need before we ask. Our needs are known by Spirit not simply before we ask. They are known before we even become conscious of them. I've been spiritually blessed by certain speakers from AA, one of whom, Earl H., says this: I don't pray so God can hear me. I mean, I don't have the idea that God is up there somewhere playing cards with his buddies. And when I start praying, he says, hold on. Earl's praying. I got to take this. I don't pray so God can hear me, Earl says. I pray so I can hear me. This is very much in the spirit of unity's affirmative prayer. I pray so that my mind and spirit replace a focus on worry, anxiety, self-seeking, resentment, hey, whatever character trait floats your boat, or should I say sinks your boat. It's replaced with a focus on healing, on love, on compassion and connection. For those of us who benefit from help, and raise your hand if you don't, this kind of affirming prayer is offered for folks who call silent unity, which I have done just this past week, asking for spiritual help in speaking here today. Silent unity has an amazing history. Charles and Myrtle Fillmore began their prayer ministry offering up prayers for anyone who contacted them by letter or telegram in 1890. It began its telephone prayer services in 1907. It's pretty cutting edge. In September 1929, the service became a continuous 24 hours a day, 7 days a week prayer vigil. 90 years ago, 1929, good timing. Now, there are other milestones I could mention, but there's one that is so delicious, I cannot pass it up. Silent Unity now answers more than 1 million calls annually. And the first time the ministry reached that million call benchmark was 25 years ago, this very day, 3:16 a.m. on December 8th, 1994. I know. If you have not called Silent Unity, I so recommend you do. They provide a model for quieting a mind in distress, hallowing this moment to be still in the presence of God and allowing that peace that passes all understanding to be our consciousness. This kind of prayer comforts and strengthens us, but prayer can also challenge us. Authentic prayer can stretch us. Simone Campbell of the Sisters of Social Service says this: "My prayer has led me to compassion. Compassion, in turn, often leads to a more nuanced analysis." Interesting. Bringing the mind in. Good. "This more nuanced approach comes out of my prayer and calls me to care for others, but it does so at a price. The Spirit has pushed me out of my comfort zone of acceptability in order to meet the needs of people I had not known were mine to care for." This is an example of prayer opening the prayer's heart and mind both, so that what flows from this prayer is a change of heart and an expansion of our mental map of the world. It's not prayer for our own comfort. In fact, through this prayer, Sister Simone says she's pushed out of her comfort zone. The sister is not praying so that she will receive anything except guidance. Similarly, my AA hero, Earl H., talks about the AA 11th step, in which members of the program seek through prayer and meditation to improve conscious contact with God. Conscious contact. I love that. The implication to me is that, as we say in unity, my separation from spirit is an illusion. I'm always in contact with divine spirit. The purpose of prayer is to make ourselves conscious of that contact. I don't pray so God can hear me. I pray so I can hear me. Or to take it further, once again with Earl's words, he says, "What do I pray for? Understanding God's will for me and the power to carry that out. And why do I meditate? To listen for the answers." This is a far cry from praying for a Lexus, a pretty mate, or a win on the football field. Prayer is a cosmic course setter, opening myself to service and love, as in this prayer of Mother Teresa's, which I invite all who hear to take to heart. "Dear Jesus, help me to spread thy fragrance everywhere I go. Flood my soul with thy spirit and love. Penetrate and possess my whole being so utterly that all my life may only be a radiance of thine. Shine through me and be so in me that every soul I come into contact with may feel thy presence in my soul. Let them look up and see no longer me, but only Jesus. Stay with me, and then I shall begin to shine as you shine, so to shine as to be a light to others. Amen." Let's do something together. Let's repeat just this last part, call and response, so we really feel it. "Stay with me, and then I shall begin to shine. Stay with me, and then I shall begin to shine. To shine as you shine. So to shine as to be a light to others. Amen." Do you feel that? What is happening in that prayer? How it's different from "help me to avoid this car accident because I was driving too fast." prayer is a process of opening our limited and boundaried selves to the divine presence over and over, so that little by little we stretch our boundaries, we extend our empathy muscles, we're pushed to the limits of our compassion until we find we can go just a bit further, care just a bit more. I have a client who has a personal trainer. Her knees had been hurting, and now, though, after several sessions with the trainer, she says she doesn't feel her knee pain anymore. That sensation is drowned out by the perception of all the other physical pain she's experiencing. She says, "I think my personal trainer is trying to kill me," but acknowledges that in being pushed past what she thought were her limits, she's truly becoming stronger and realizing how much more potential she has physically. It's like that in prayer. If we approach it like Mother Teresa, like Sister Simone, she'll be a saint someday, I'm sure, with spirit pushing us more and more out of our old zone of comfort into new areas. I found myself reading a recent article on Fred Rogers. There's somebody who is already a saint. The writer quotes the language of Mr. Rogers' ordination into the Presbyterian ministry in 1963. And what was said at that ordination by his friend, the Reverend Bill Barker, was this: "We charge you to shake us through a God who involves himself in our world. We as the church charge that you speak to us to disturb us. We charge you to speak to us to remind us that we too, through you, must be involved." Just as Fred Rogers was enjoined to speak to us to disturb us, and just as my client notes that her personal trainer is trying to kill me, each act of truly conscious prayer is an invitation to spirit to grow us, to stretch us, to overhaul the rickety structures of our defenses, to reshape us as more useful, more benevolent, more loving. True prayer is not about making an elevator pitch to God, like a kind of cosmic Kickstarter, so that the prospect of my life will be funded the way I think it should. Prayer that is authentic, a real spiritual act, is never transactional. It is transformational. In the darkness of the Advent season, awaiting the light of Christ's nativity, we're invited to know in prayer that this is the darkness of being held closely by God, with or without our awareness. This is where transformation happens, says Father Richard Rohr. We become remade and reborn through the crucible of prayer when we open our hearts in surrender to what is. What is then reshaped in our lives can become permanent. And as we are remade through this transformational process, not transactional process, we will find that we still get to keep the change. Ernest Hemingway, that flawed vessel of truth, as are we all, once wrote, "The world breaks everyone, and afterward many are strong at the broken places." Maybe prayer is ultimately about seeing and recognizing that beauty in our lives and loved ones, in our community and world, knowing that the world we see, this world that was unbroken and unified in the archetypal garden, is now still beautiful and is strong, even as we see that it is in pieces. We share the legacy of love and light, of the beauty of spirit broken into the countless pieces that are all the beings of the created world. That light of Christ shines in each set of eyes. And that shared beauty is a thread that binds us together. Through prayer, may we continually know and reconnect to that light, that essence of Christ in this Advent season, and again throughout our lives. I want to give you one more prayer for the benediction. And I've noticed that every source of inspiration I've used today was Catholic. I don't know what that means, but the original meaning of Catholic was universal. So perhaps it does fit in unity. Thomas Merton wrote this beautiful prayer. It's in his book, Thoughts in Solitude. O Lord God, I have no idea where I am going. I do not see the road ahead of me. I cannot know for certain where it will end. Nor do I really know myself. And the fact that I think I am following your will does not mean that I am actually doing so. But I believe that the desire to please you does, in fact, please you. And I hope I have that desire in all that I am doing. I hope that I will never do anything apart from that desire to please you. And I know that if I do this, you will lead me by the right road, though I may know nothing about it. Therefore, I will trust you always. Though I may seem to be lost and in the shadow of death, I will not fear. For you are ever with me, and you will never leave me to make my journey alone.